This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Timps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. This week, we're talking about faith as a factor in mental health. And this is a theme we've wanted to cover for a while. And every time I say that, I'm like, God, I say that a lot these days. But the point is, we do have a lot of pitches around this particular theme. But one of the challenges was we found that they came from seemingly like one or two boxes where it was either people that were very anti-religion and had experiences that I would say aren't as reflective of a lot of people's experiences, are more on the extreme side, and therefore were sort of more, you know, all religion bad, bring it down sort of mentality, versus then the other box seemed to be religion is wonderful and everyone should have faith and be practicing in this way in their life, or otherwise they can't achieve happiness. I would say certainly the people that I know generally fall between those two ends. And so with today's guest, I think we've got a really good balance with Thomas Rowland of not only talking through the challenges around religion as a factor in his mental health, but also some of the ways that he's overcome those challenges, still found a lot of purpose and support within the religious community he's part of, and also as a counsellor brings that part to his work as well, where whilst he's not a religious counsellor, it is one of his specialisms, and so a lot of his clients come to him that are struggling with faith, including people that are religious leaders, like priests as well, who want an outside perspective of an independent mental health professional to talk through what is really a very complicated topic, and one that, of course, ourselves included, everyone comes from their own perspective on.
Yeah, absolutely, Bob. And first of all, I really do respect you for being, I should apologise for my voice, but I also really respect you with this because you've really been, which you are with most guests and most topics, thoughtful. But with this, you've been really, really wanted to get the right guest that can offer that balance of perspective because it is an important topic and, as you said, extremely complex. So, yeah, I really respect you for being patient with kind of trying to not only to deal with the topic, but get the guest that can for that perspective in a balanced way. So yeah, brilliant for that. I absolutely agree. It's so complex. And from somebody like me, I haven't been brought up with any religion. My dad's family are all Catholic. And I guess my grandparents on my mum's side are Church of England. But when I say brought up with no religion, like religion through school that other people learn and I've learned about the Bible, but my life has never in any way been guided by religion or the traditions that sit often within religion. And I think that's another thing that I've learned since being with a partner for all of my adult life whose family are very religious, that the traditions actually seem to outweigh some of the depth of what the actual religion stands for. And it's the traditions that can often cause restrictions and limitations in people's freedom that therefore have an impact then on their mental health and how much of their truth they want to live, as opposed to really just what the religion stands for. Because as we know, in most cases, it's generally a lot about love and caring and giving. And that's what, you know, ultimately all religion generally strives for, and helping your neighbour and, you know, living the best version of yourself. So I think it's all of that that gets entangled with it, and all the traditions that do, you know, unfortunately, have a negative impact sometimes on us, on our freedom, and then obviously on our mental health.
Absolutely. And it's something that for me, growing up from a religious background and being a Christian myself, you know, I can't, of course, deny that there aren't huge conflicts that can come from religion and particularly the interactions between them. You know, me being Irish, having a Catholic and a Protestant parent, you know, I'm not going to pretend there weren't, you know, more than just raised eyebrows in the family long before I was born about that particular union. And yet, like we talk about in the episode, I find that we're very culturally religious, and that's very steeped in how our family operates and sort of the, like you say, the outlook and the kind of traditions we have. But then in other ways, there's a lot of flexibility. And I think I've really benefited from seeing not only family members from different versions of Christian faiths, but also different ways they practice. And so I think I felt a lot of freedom growing up around that, which has been nice. And so, yeah, absolutely. It's a fascinating topic to explore. And, you know, hearing the guests' perspective on it, even though we come from still Christianity, although different versions, our experiences in some ways couldn't be more different. And so I've got a quote actually that I think summarizes some of these factors that you've mentioned really well. And this is from Kenneth Paragmant, who's a professor of psychology and an expert on religion and health at Bowling Green State University in Ohio. And quick side note on that, I should say Bowling Green is the area in which the university is based in. It is not named after a green where you would bowl. I did double check it. I was like, that is an interesting name for a unit. And so he said, if people have a loving, kind perception of God and feel that God is supportive, they seem to experience benefits. But we know there is a darker side to spirituality. If you tend to see God as punitive, threatening, or unreliable, then that's not very helpful to your health. And I think that's a good way of summarizing up that, how many factors go into this, right? That it's not really about, I don't think, a particular religion as much as it's about how that's practiced, what you're around in terms of family, levels of strictness, levels of options, and how, I think particularly here in the guest experience, how comfortable you are expressing doubt and sort of talking through challenges you might have in your faith.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that quote. What a great balance. And of course it is, you know, the way that you just hit the nail on the head with that, the way that you might express your doubt, the way that you might be unsure about things, the uncertainty as you grow up through different stages in your life while still trying to practice your religion. And I think most people who probably maintain that in a happy and healthy way throughout their lives are those who have had that opportunity to be a bit explorative with it and a bit free, as opposed to often finding those who have had no option and had a really strict upbringing. That's sometimes where we see the difficulties lie and the rejection to it, which again is a shame in lots of other ways. But one of the things that I will say is that I've never known, because I wasn't brought up in religion, I guess, such a community. Oh my goodness. And as somebody who works in the mental health space, we know that we talk about community so much and how that important that is for individuals to feel connection with other people. And whether you're religious or not, my auntie, who I've spoken on the pod before about, who has mental illness and she's been ill for a long time now, most of her adult life, quite severely. So many times when I just think, oh, auntie, if you were part of a group, or I'd love to get you part of a group that have regular, structured, generally trustworthy and loyal people. You're never on your own. You're just never on your own. But I know that there'll be people listening to this who perhaps feel opposite. And again, if you come from quite a strict religion or strict upbringing, you may feel totally on your own and totally isolated. So I'm not kind of giving that this umbrella approach. But, you know, my friend who's brought up in as a Christian, as a Methodist Christian, whose parents are so relaxed and free, but yet go to church every week and live their life through the values of Christianity in such a lovely and open way, that she has brought her children up in that same way, you know. And the first thing on Christmas Day is about the nativity play, and their advent calendars are never chocolate. They're always reflective of their religion, but yet they've been able to be free as people growing up. And it's beautiful to see. But yeah, that the community and the engagements and the trips, and, you know, my partner was brought up in religion and he did more family and group things than I ever would have been able to do, you know, climbing this mountain and getting on a going here and everybody helping out financially and everybody bringing in food together and having parties and weddings and just so much together that you know you'd never be on your own. And I think I've seen that in such a beautiful way. I've been overwhelmed by that. Sometimes it's rocked me actually, because there's obviously the other side that I stand quite strongly for too, especially about freedom with a capital F. So yeah, I think that quote really does depict what we're talking about really well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel that, you know, even I'm reminded of being here in Dublin, both my godparents live here. And so, you know, I've had, you know, them both very much step up to the plate and be like, okay, well, you're in our neck of the woods now, your parents are away, like, is there any ways we can support you and like catch up with you regularly and check in? And that's so lovely. And I think that's maybe a very organic feeling version of it that I've been around, where it's like, you know, they're people that are close to me because I was brought up around them and they're very close to my parents, as opposed to it feeling like, you know, maybe they're doing it out of obligation because of the role they were given at my christening. Do you know what I mean? It feels like a very sort of, yeah, perhaps that relaxed approach, but still, you know, living those values of looking out for each other. And so it's really lovely to see, like you say, how much people can get from it. But the experiences just vary so broadly. And I found some stats here from the Mental Health Foundation that I think really summarise that as well. That in 2016, they reported on a survey in which 45% of mental health professionals felt that religion could lead to mental ill health, and 39% thought that religion could protect people from mental ill health. And the foundation consider that this uncertainty is in part due to the fact that historically, the association between the two has not always been regarded as a positive one. Which I think, personally, is putting it very lightly. And I would say a lot of people still very much hold negative associations around religion, you know, organised religion in particular. And so, you know, that was a good start of demonstrating that even among mental health professionals that are seeing a lot of how these factors can play into the stories of those they deal with, there's still this deep conflict. And I'll be honest, for myself, I don't know how I'd answer that survey, because I think I would want to tick both boxes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that says it all. Both answer to both questions, yes and yes. Is it a protective factor? Yes, can be. Can it also add to problems? Yeah, definitely, as we know and we see in the world all around us. I probably, if I'm honest, I could see myself going from one, ticking one box more than the other. And that's just because I'm like, I guess I could only go from my experience of seeing other people who have had to lie and be deceitful in their truth, in their day-to-day life, just because something says or somebody says you can't do that. You know, for me personally, that overwhelms me, that thought of that, that people have to live by that. So yeah, but I also think, on a bit of a side note, which I haven't explored fully, so nobody kind of quote me on it, but you know, having me growing up so free, like so free, I don't think I could be any more free from my parents. Sometimes I wonder whether that has added, though, to me being a little bit too free, because I could actually go anywhere and do anything in my mind, whether that sometimes has an impact on my mental health, you know, because, you know, sometimes when you've got a bit of structure and you know what is meant to be the way forward, you kind of live by that. And then that, I feel like that helps. Obviously, I can't experience that, so I can only speak from my own experience, because that hasn't happened for me in my life. But you know, I could just be whoever I want to be. My parents would have no judgment on anything I've ever done or want to do, unless it was harming somebody else. And so I grow up and I have this whole thing about freedom and my kids, and I want them to have it. But then at times of struggle, and when my mental health's been at its lowest, I've probably yearned for some kind of path. So I just try and live by what's right and wrong, and by treating other people with respect. And I think ultimately, and with love and kindness, that's where religion is. So I always feel like I'm aligned to that. I always say to Anthony, I'm my own religion. I'm the religion of Danny, because Danny tries to treat people with respect and love and kindness and help people who are in need. So that's enough for me. But, you know, do you know what I mean, Bob? There's also that part of it, isn't there, of having something that you thought that you fall back, that you really, truly believe.
For sure. And I relate to that a lot, you know, not feeling comfortable in my own skin as a young person and feeling pretty unsafe for a lot of my childhood, that, you know, absolutely, I would encourage people to find, you know, genuine safety. And that's the thing, we could always look at it from different perspectives. And there's always examples we can think of backgrounds people have come from where it's been described as like a safe space, but has it actually been? And, you know, I think it's for each of us to find where our actual sort of sense of belonging is. And I think that's a way that perhaps all listeners could interpret this kind of interview and discussion I have with Thomas today, is whatever faith means to you. Because I think for a lot of people, that is a belief system. And I think for me personally, the way I was raised to sort of be, I think, very inclusive of different people's perspectives. You know, if someone has a lot of shared values, as values I was brought up with, albeit mine were within the framework of this faith, well, then who am I to say that your version of a particular, you know, rule around being a good person is any better or worse than the one I was taught through this particular avenue? And so I guess there's ways that we can all find belonging and community and home and something to believe in, because I think we all need that. I think we all need something to believe in. And, you know, for some of my friends, that's religion. For other friends of mine, it's saving the planet. Is there, you know, I mean, I care about that obviously as well, but like that's their sort of connection with the people of our earth and nature. And, you know, they sort of really connect with the world in that way. And I think that comes through in the interview. Genuine, safe connection where you can be your honest self. That's what we all want, whatever context that's in.
Absolutely. I mean, Bob, you're looking at me and I could go on listening. You know, we're trying not to talk for a long time about this topic, which we could, which we enjoy. And Bobby did a great interview with the guest. Bobby will finish the sentence. He's looking at me and I'm trying to say, keep my mouth shut, go, okay, yeah, that's it, absolutely, let's move on. And I want to just respond and go, yes, because this, and yes, because that, let's keep talking. But we know we can't. So yeah, I think we've managed to put it into some kind of nutshell, although that's not
as, easy as much as you can, yeah, for such a nuanced topic like this. And so, yeah, I'll be interested to hear the feedback on it. But this is one that I think meant a lot to me as someone that personally, I think as the listeners will hear in the episode, I've not found faith a huge conflict with my own mental health. But I think a lot of that was the way I was brought up in it, as opposed to, you know, I'm not for a second saying that isn't a very widespread issue. And so, yeah, great to have the conversation and great to talk it through with you. Maybe we'll have to do a follow-up sometime, you and me.
Yeah, we need one.
All right. Well, with that all said, please enjoy this interview with Thomas Rowland in a moment. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
We're delighted to be partnering again with Wild, the natural deodorant company we've been using for over a year now.
Yes, and having tried other options previously, this is a sustainable deodorant that really works and smells brilliant at the same time.
You just buy one aluminium case that lasts a lifetime and holds biodegradable deodorant refills.
These unisex scents are so distinctive and include regular limited edition specials like the 3 Christmas scents that just launched.
Most of us stick with one boring deodorant for life. I know I did, even if it isn't the best fit for us. This one has a 100% satisfaction guarantee, so it's as risk-free as life gets. Plus, as one of our listeners, you'll get 20% off your first order by using the code MENTAL20.
We really love this brand, so join us in going wild for natural deodorant today at wearewild.com with that code MENTAL20 at the checkout.
This is a limited time offer, so get wild for your pits today.
So, hi, I'm Tom. And yeah, my first experience of kind of struggling with mental health was about when I was about 11, just gone up to secondary school. And it was a really hard time that. There was kind of finding my place, really struggling to find my place in this bigger school. But it was also really hard for me, and this is where we get straight into our topic, I think. So it's really hard for me with my faith. I'd been brought up in a community where faith was everything. Faith was really important, and it fed into every single area of life so that everything became, is it good or bad? Is it godly or ungodly? Living with this constant sense of some higher power looking over me, I guess. And sometimes that was great, that was care, that was love, and sometimes that was displeasure, that was disappointing, that was judgment. And so I got to secondary school and I was really struggling to find my place, and I was really struggling to make friendships and connect with people, and I was really struggling to with my faith. I was starting to have doubts. I was starting to, you know, I was a way out of that safe zone in my primary school, which was a kind of C of E school, and exposed to much more people, exposed to doubt. I mean, a big part of that is also as you grow at that age that you are developing sexually. And that was a definite no-no in my in my faith, and it wasn't spoken to. So all of these things were sort of happening, and I felt alone, and I felt mostly just numb and withdrawn. And it got to the end of, I don't know, that year, I think, at school. I remember just being in my bed in tears because I didn't know what was true, but doubting meant that I was risking going to hell. And that didn't seem fair, but I had no argument. And I was just, I remember looking up it from my bed into the night and just wondering, just wishing I'd not been born into that sort of game of heaven and hell. That sort of game of where I just felt like I couldn't win. I was awful in having all of these things going on, and yet I was supposed to be better. I was supposed to manage somehow, but I couldn't. You know, all this was not really spoken about. Even, you know, it's what now, 15, 20 years ago, what I'd now call is mental health. But I had no terminology for it then. This idea of mental health and it being okay. I don't think for me, I really appreciated that that was to do with mental health much later until it's only then that it starts to dawn on me that, oh, I've really struggled with some of these things. And no, I didn't have a diagnosis. Maybe I didn't struggle as much as other people. Maybe I did. But these struggles have been part of my life. And I think particularly at that point, you know, that was the pinnacle of that struggle, I think.
Hearing that, the primary feeling I think of is fear, that it sounds so scary to be going through all those conflicts in your head when you're young, and the idea of even any doubt, any unsuredness being something that was demonized with the style of religion that you'd grown up around. And when you reference, say, not wanting to have been born, are you able to tell, was that to do with not wanting to be born into like that particular family, or maybe seeing that other people's lives looked easier or different to yours? Or was it not wanting to be born into a world in which there was the complication of faith at all?
I think it was being born full stop. I think although there was doubt, there was still this, you know, at that age, you're still part of your family unit, or, you know, my family unit was very strong, was a safe place for me in many ways. And my church unit was a very safe space. It was regular. It was always there. And that's what I knew. So that was my world. Like, they defined what the world was. So when I say not wanting to be born, it wasn't a sense of there could be another way of looking at this, or other people seem to have it better. It's this oppressive sense of this is how it is. There is a God and he is judging me. And some reason I have doubts, that must mean X, Y, or Z. It was very much, I think, the latter of what you were saying there.
And this idea of the doubts being something that could compromise your faith and could compromise you being acceptable in God's eyes, do you remember where that came from? Was that something that was explicitly talked about through your experience?
No.
So it was like an impression?
So I think throughout my story, it's... there's some explicit stuff that's said, but it's often the implicit, the not said, that, or the undertones that got to me. Or even because it's not said, that leaves space for me to interpret it my own way, in my own way.
Which really, in a way, I think can be worse, because if you're struggling with your mental health anyway, and who you are and where you fit, then any indication that you might be rejected from something that's so core to who you are and who your family is. Of course, your mind could go to the worst case scenario of even things that haven't been even hinted at. Oh, that might get me cast out as well.
What there was, I think, in my community was a sense of us and them. So a real sense that either you're a believer or you're a non-believer. Either you're, I don't know, born again or not born again. And so the more I think you firm up the boundaries, the more there is scope for being excluded or fears about being excluded. And so, you know, it wasn't really said that you can't doubt. And, you know, later on when I came across doubt and talked to people a bit more, it was a bit more okay. It seemed okay to people. But what there was this sort of sadness or fear around people kind of falling away or people losing their faith. And it was captured in like, oh, we pray for them because then they're going to hell or something. You know, like it was along that trajectory. And so for me, and I was a very sensitive young boy, you know, I was very sensitive. I very much wanted to please. I very much wanted to do the right thing. Like for me, I caught those. And it was like, okay, that's what I've got to be a good person. That's what I've got to really avoid in order to be okay. And it got to a point where I couldn't fulfill all of those implicit messages that I was receiving about how to be part of God's people, part of be a good Christian, be a good person.
Right. And I think that is so difficult to grapple with, and particularly every place of worship will have their own slant on it. And I think when I was growing up and going to church myself, a church that was quite low key in how strict it was on its interpretation, it was very acknowledged that there could be multiple interpretations and that we all had our own individual relationship with God. And I think that was very helpful then in feeling less constricted and less fearful of, okay, what if I interpret that particular verse slightly different to the priest does? You know, it was a very sort of perhaps flat structure in that way, rather than, no, this person is the religious elder in the room and therefore what they say is unquestionable. And years later, I did go to a church as an adult, which was a lot more like that. And we would have this strange contrast of, we would have Bible study once a week, which I would go to in addition to the regular services. And on the surface, that made it seem like, okay, this is also somewhere where we can explore and we can share different perspectives. But I didn't find that to play out. It was still always went back to the priest, who would be like, well, pastor, he went by the term of. And it was whether or not, you know, he agreed with that interpretation or not, was whether or not it was right. And it was, I think, a real interesting experience for me to have not come from that kind of religion, to then find it very strange. But for the people around me, that's what they were used to.
It's not just what we're used to or what I was used to, is what gave me a sense of security. Like being able to go to the Bible, there being one truth on all matters, and that, you know, there being something that we could discover and it being the word of God to us. Like that all brought this sense of security and also sense of identity. And in many ways, you know, that's, I can focus on the negative with this sort of thing, but equally that security, that identity was something in which I flourished in. I became quite independent within that world. I became quite competent within that world. I became quite confident within that world. And I developed loads of skills, interpersonal skills, loads of sort of logical, critical thinking skills within that world because I felt so safe in it. So I have this sort of like both things going on in which, yeah, I got this real experience at 11 and I always struggled with doubt. But running alongside that, you know, for the next 10 years still, I was in churches growing. Growing as a person.
It's really true, that strange contrast that we can have, that often certain environments, the more kind of rules and ways of doing things that there are, the more you can find ways to triumph through knowledge of that. You know, in the example that comes to mind of a different scenario might be people that spend time in the military and all the rules and the hierarchy and the distinct way of living your life through that kind of service. People that commit to it and suit that environment can really excel because you can know how it works and therefore you can excel through a lot of that knowledge and training and commitment. And yet at the same time, the very skills and structure that may help you excel in there then means that when you're not serving time or you're away home on leave, you can really miss that structure and you can find it so much more difficult to live in a kind of freedom that a lot of people might be like, oh, of course I'd as an adult like to decide what time I wake up in the morning. Yeah. And yet if that's not what you're used to, if you're so used to that structure and have learned how to thrive in it, the idea of choosing your own waking up time may feel very strange and quite unsettling. Certainly talking to friends of mine that have gone through that.
That's really fascinating. I struggle with all of this is my memory of it and story of that group. You know, they were loving people. They were really loving people and really caring. And probably, you know, a lot of my remembrance of things is mixed in with, is skewed because I was interpreting the world as a child and trying to work things out as a child there. And, you know, I knew how to play by the rules. I knew how to, you say, get up in the morning. You know, I knew that getting up in the morning, doing my Bible reading and prayer, like, and then what to say at these sort of Bible studies at church, how to, you know, I knew the ladder. I knew the rungs of the ladder very well because I'd always lived there and I'd always been implicitly working out how do I get up this religious ladder. And so, you know, while I have all that sort of parallel feeling of tension and doubt and can this all be true, at the same time, there's a real fear around, well, what on earth would my life be if I wasn't in this? It seems okay just doubting it from the outside, but when that's your whole life and when that's been your whole life and you know you feel safe, you feel secure in that, like trying to work out, okay, so what's my life going to be about if I'm not revolving around church? It is very scary and very just an abyss, or it was like an abyss to me.
Right. And I think something you've touched on there as well is that you can build up a certain social currency through it, which can really help with your feeling of belonging and value and the world making sense, because you can have all these connections through a religious environment by being one of the people that shows up every week, by being one of the people that knows the right things to say and how to behave in that environment. You can win over a lot of people following those rules that don't necessarily apply so much in the rest of your life. And so I find this kind of exploration really fascinating of how you had these parallels you describe going on, of both growing in your faith and understanding that environment and talking about the ladder, I think you called it, I think can exist in a lot of, particularly the most structured religious environments.
Yeah.
There always seems to be some element of hierarchy and some kind of reward for behaviour, which has always been a bit of a strange contrast to me, because it's like it often comes in the most devout environments are the same ones where there's the most social incentive via other people to behave in a godly way. And I think that's such a strange contrast that you'd think, if anything, those kind of environments, people would be more drawn to think, no, I don't need to incentivize this behavior. I don't need to give any feedback to this person. God will decide how that behavior is seen. Is it just me that finds that a bit of a strange contrast?
No, I love it. I love what you're saying. And I was thinking of it as, you know, we talked about this explicit and implicit level. Like, explicitly, we talk about, you know, I don't know how Christian to go at this point, but, you know, we talk about Jesus as a servant. We talk about Jesus as completely undoing all of these sort of social ladders of politics, of power, of what's meaningful, of glory, of what's glorious, or all this. Like, and that's our story of the cross, which is Jesus completely subverting all of those sort of thought structures. And yet at the implicit level, it's happening. You know, like there's that feeling that, oh, are you reading your Bible enough? Are you praying enough? Are you doing these things that you should be doing? Are you pure enough? This sort of, like you were saying, this kind of incentivizing or these sort of social, I mean, I love Rogers and that idea of conditions of worth. Like, you only belong if, you only have worth if. Like, that can be happening under it. And that makes it all the more confusing, because at one level, I'm like, I love this stuff that Christianity seems all about. And at another level, it's crushing and it's oppressive, because, you know, I love the devoutness and the seriousness with which, or I loved it in with which we approached God. And I hated that sort of sense that was also there, was that God could chuck you out at any point, or that you had to be this or that in order to be close to God. So I think those two things are just there. Or like they just seem to be there in those devout places where people take religion so seriously. Something so beautiful, I never want to let go of it. And something so ugly, I want nothing to do with it.
It's such a tricky contrast, isn't it? And I think that we can draw those kind of parallels in a lot of environments. You know, I think of perhaps schooling, for example. You work as a secondary school teacher as one of your jobs. And, you know, there's those kind of correlations there where the more like academic and high profile the school, the more strict they're expected to be in terms of behaviour of the students. And so, you know, there's a lot of environments that are like that where, yeah, the more devout, if whether it's religion or whether it's study, that the higher the level of expectations and judgment can come in as a way to enforce that, which you're right, seems a contrast to certain religious teachings, actually from a lot of different religions, in Absolutely. Terms of not Absolutely. Judging others. And it's, yeah, it can be a strange thing to navigate. I think as I'm hearing you describe this, this is probably something that was quite heavily influenced by my culture and my background as someone who's Irish. And so for my parents, religion was always a big part of their life growing up. And my mum was, they were both raised in religious schools. My mum was partly taught by nuns here in Dublin. And I think, interestingly, that helped them have a certain sort of healthy cynicism of people being overly strict about religion. Because in a way, it's quite baked into the Irish culture. And so I think there can be a certain guilt that can come along with that. But there isn't perhaps quite the same fear of being cast out of the religion. Because when you come from such a religious country, where would you go? Which part of Ireland would you go where it's not religious? And so I think it's interesting that certain things that happened where it was sort of sillier examples of judgment. Like I remember when I was little, an older person in the church, as opposed to anyone within, you know, structural seniority, disapproved of a pair of sneakers I wore to church. She didn't think they were smart enough for the environment. And me, as a sort of cocky little kid maybe at the time, I told her that I didn't think God cared about my sneakers when there's so much going on in the world. And whilst it's a funny situation to think back on, I do kind of stand by that as an adult. You know, so drawing back a little bit to what you were saying earlier about these parallels, it's interesting how you were exploring and growing in your faith in a way that you found really helpful and such community in, whilst also having these feelings of doubt. And so were you able to find ways to explore those as well, albeit maybe more behind the scenes?
I think firstly, I'll reflect on what you said, because my situation was so different. You know, because I was in England at a time when, yeah, being religious was weird. Being religious was being intolerant, I guess. And tolerance was the, seemed like what you were supposed to do in this, in our society. So I was part of a smaller group within conservative evangelicalism, within Christianity. So we were kind of a niche of a subculture. And so there was that pressure to, there was always that feeling of, oh, we are different. We are different to those around us. And I think a fear in that. So when I went to school, I remember the first experience of somebody, I must have been about four, somebody saying they didn't believe in God. And just fear in my being, in my body towards that person. And it was like, can I trust you now? Are you like, who are you? You seemed nice 5 minutes ago, and suddenly my whole world is confronted with this difference. And that was something I was always, because our culture and because of how sensitive maybe I was very about purity and being different. Like, I was always trying to navigate, is this the right thing to do or isn't this not? Am I going to be led astray by these people or am I not? Can I trust them or can I not? So there was always this sort of separation between me and my friends, that I experienced anyway, because I was never quite sure how close I could get to them. So back to your question, I went through secondary school, largely putting my doubts to one side. I think they were rumbling, but I had too much else. I had trying to work out every day with school and trying to live in this, you know, trying to become a better Christian at the same time, I think. And all the stuff that you go around in, it goes on in secondary school. I think it became a real issue when I started studying philosophy. So I did a philosophy course for my A-levels. And I think probably all that doubt that was under the surface made me want to prove it wrong. So I studied philosophy so that I could prove that I'm okay, actually, our faith is actually right. You know, it's okay, kind of thing. And it didn't.
Right, and it sounds like even the way you described that, it was almost like one step further. It wasn't just this faith is correct, but any doubt is completely ridiculous, really. That you even wanted to disprove any question over the faith, let alone the faith being real.
Yeah. I think part of that is how I was trying to navigate relating with the friends I had, the non-Christian friends I had, and still hold on to a faith that was saying, actually, these people are going to hell in the state that they're at the moment, and how you navigate that. So the way I navigated that was thinking, well, if only they knew a bit more, or if only they were a bit more open, or if only they could listen to these arguments, then they would believe. And so in studying philosophy, I think part of it was, well, let's work out what are these arguments, and then my faith is okay, because then I can still be friends with them, because they're not quite evil then, they're just a bit ignorant, or they're just not quite open enough. You know, and I hate talking like that, by the way. Like I don't hold to that at all, and I wouldn't have articulated it then either. But I think it's all part of this navigating of, you know, who am I in this world? How do I relate to these people when I'm holding all these beliefs and want to be, like, not just want to be, but see no other way of living apart from being in this group that holds these beliefs? So, yeah, it did have to be unquestionable. Otherwise, the way I was constructing and living and finding my way in the world would be falling apart.
Yeah, and then you would have to question everything, and that would be even more overwhelming than what you were currently experiencing.
Yeah.
And it makes a lot of sense to me there where you describe your feelings towards your friends, because even though it can sound like a judgmental position to be coming from, I can see that there was genuine feeling behind it, that the fear you had of yourself ultimately going to hell was then being transposed onto them as well, that you wanted to protect them, you wanted to help them towards a certain path that you've been told was really the only one. And yeah, it's an interesting contrast to my own experience, because I don't think I grew up with really any of that. And I've never really thought about that, but I think I perhaps grew up around a lot more of a flexible version of faith. And, you know, in many ways, it was equally unquestioning. God was absolutely real, but also you were allowed to have doubts about that. Ultimately, God was still real, though. You know, that sort of contrast. And yeah. I think, again, maybe it partly comes back to cultural influences as well, that I think for a lot of Irish people, it's baked into the culture in a way where it's like, no, but that's my values. That's how I live my life. That's how I try and treat others. It's so much more than a building, you know. Does that sound harsh? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I do. I think there was... What jarred was when you said it's much more than a building. And I say that because, you know, for me it was, and for my group, it was like it had to cover every single area of your life.
Yeah, sorry, I see what you mean. Okay, what I mean by that is it is not actually about going to a building a set number of times a week, and that is your faith. Yeah. Your faith is 360 days a year all the time. Yeah. And that can be part of it. But I think I wasn't raised that is an absolute necessity. I don't. We had a routine of going to church every week, but if we missed it for a reason that seemed reasonable, that wasn't an impact on our faith.
It feels like it can hold things much more, like hold difference and hold looseness and ambiguity almost much more, and there still be a faith that is holding it much more. You know, I guess I felt like, you know, there were, you know, kids would have birthday parties on Sunday mornings, like that. My friends would have parties on Sunday mornings, but we didn't go, or I wasn't allowed to go because Sunday was holy and that's when we went to church. And if I did do something else on a Sunday morning, it was like, well, are you losing your faith? Like, where's that going to lead? All those implicit messages. So, it couldn't hold much, is what it felt like. And maybe when you've got a whole culture that's where it's baked into it, and it, you know, a whole culture has to hold everybody in it, then it feels like there was that scope, that freedom, I guess, to be different or to explore or to, yeah. Or maybe there just wasn't this thin line of what you had to do.
Yeah. And I think I grew up around a lot of examples of that, even within my family, of people that were living out their faith in very different ways. And that was that was seen as legitimate. You know, I wasn't around any, oh, did you know that person doesn't go to church anymore? Yeah. And yet it was always, I think probably always an undercurrent. And actually, you know, one of the clearest memories for me was the last conversation I ever had with my grandmother on my dad's side. Essentially, the last thing she ever said to me was, don't forget about God. And so it was always there, and it was always something that you were expected to have as part of what guided your life, as opposed to it being something maybe as structured in terms of rules.
What really resonates with me and what you're saying is how there can be different expressions of that faith, or different spiritualities, or however you put it. Like, I can live my faith this way, or I can live my faith that way. And there being an okayness around that. Like, this faith, this culture, this God is big enough to hold all that, is what it kind of felt like.
Yeah, you know, I can only speak from my own experiences on this, because I think I was raised so much with that mentality of faith is something that's personal. It's your relationship directly with God. And as long as you're looking after that and it makes enough sense to you, then hopefully that's enough. And so, you know, even thinking very close to home with my parents, I have a Catholic parent and I have a Protestant parent. And that can, you know, still very much be such a big deal here, and was something that certain family members had more opinions about. And now, ironically, they go to the same church now, which it happens to be a Protestant one. And my mum goes to it. She's the Catholic one. My mum goes to my dad's church essentially more than he does. But then every day when they go to bed, he's the one that kneels down next to the bed and says his prayers before he gets into bed. And so even within their, you know, long marriage and, you know, successful close relationship, that contrast exists. And certain things that on the outside might seem ironic, like my mum seemingly going to my dad's church more than he does, it works for them. And I think it's been nice to grow up with that example.
It feels like right in that heart of that family, like there was this difference that had been bridged. And so then the difference that we go in, you know, it allows for then expression and us exploring other differences and our own path, and that being okay. Like, you can still be part of this family if you're X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, and my mum reading a book while my dad is praying is not seen as any kind of disrespect. That's a part of just the way they live out their faith individually and also don't interrupt it and interfere with each other in that way. It's interesting. I don't talk about this stuff a huge amount, I think, because I've not experienced some of the conflicts that you have. And I think in many ways I'm even broader on my approach to this than a lot of my family. So certain things like growing up in Birmingham and being around a lot of diversity, I personally, I don't think if you're praying to a different God, those prayers are getting lost. You know, I think we're all fallible humans and we're doing our best to figure out a very complicated existence in a relatively short lifetime. And I don't think there's a coincidence that so many religions come from similar time periods in history, or the Quran also mentions Jesus, or a lot of the moral values that we experience in Christianity carry across not just different versions of Christianity, but different religions have oftentimes very similar morals in them. And so for you, going through exploring that with theology and working on your own faith and your own doubts, what sort of position have you ended up in now?
Yeah, and I realise I've mostly spoken about 6 years of my life is all that we've covered here, isn't it? But they were years of turmoil, I think, weren't they? And I think, you know, when I got to with philosophy, I then studied it at university as well. And, you know, where I got to was, I just can't prove this. Like, and actually, there's good reasons for my non-Christian friends not to believe Christianity and not to believe in God and all this. Like, it was a real sort of stripping of all of that sense of all the buffers I put around me to kind of protect me from non-belief. And that experience, I mean, it floored me. I just didn't know what to do with my life. But it was also so important for me, I think, because it stripped off all the rubbish. It kind of stripped off everything that was non-essential for me. And because I think I'd grown in this confidence as well within my community, I could then say, well, actually, you know, this is where I am. And start to take a more independent path of like, well, this is my faith. This is what I've come to realise, and I've got to work it out. And so where I got to was...
Yeah, where did I get to?
Are you checking now? Have I got anywhere? I'm not sure.
I do wonder that sometimes. I'm like, where am I in all this? But
I think the next bit, you fast forward into basically my counselling training. So all this experience had just opened me up, I think, and it made me much more okay with doubt, with uncertainty and with all that. And then the counselling training, what I saw was two things, I think, from that. One was, oh, there's just so much that I share with you. Even though you're different, even though you've come from somewhere else, there's so much that I can relate to and that seems so as vital for me as it has seemed for you. And the other part was really clarifying in religious contexts how harm can be done so inadvertently, so unmeaningly. Like we're trying to do our best for people. We're trying to help people and we're trying to please God and yet people can be so harmed by it in similar ways that I've already related, but also in people's particulars. And so I came from that and I think, so where did it get me? It got me to a place in spirituality, in faith, where, yeah, I'm still a Christian. And like I've already said, yeah, I really love some of the Christian story and a lot of the Christian story. But equally, I love talking to people who are different, because that's when two things I find happen. One is that, oh, there's so much we share, and oh, you're another human on this journey trying to figure out what our life is all about and what we can ultimately trust and what is meaningful. And also, I have this strange experience where it like takes me back to my own spirituality and my own relationship with myself and other people and I'd still say God, but or the transcendent, and it's like I treasure that all the more. Like it takes me back to what seems much more important and valuable. And I think, what is that all about? If I can articulate that, it's this sense of belonging and I'll use a very Christian term, of holiness or sacredness, of that, like, within us all, there's something sacred that is truly precious. And it's like, when I can meet somebody else at that sort of digging into that sort of level, then my own preciousness is somehow seen and theirs is seen and I belong again. I belong part of humanity, which is massive for me, given my own experience, because I never thought I belonged. I never, I was trying to be apart from humanity and always wanting to be normal and belong. And so that's really, I think, where my doubt has ended to, is almost this spiritual sense of, yeah, we're all spiritual. And we're all, and you know, you could take a very non-religious take on that and just say we're valuable and that's what we're all, and that's fine, I'm okay with that.
No, I agree. I think absolutely everyone has faith in something. You know, we all have our versions of why we think the world makes sense and certain patterns we notice in life. And for some people, that is via a religion. For some people, it's to do with astrology. For some people, it's to do with nature and the patterns of life and death that can exist in that. You know, I think it's whatever works for you. And I guess in a broad sense, if it can connect you to other people and to a meaningful purpose in your life. I don't think I'm in any position to be like, no, which version of this is right or wrong. And it sounds like for you, a lot of this journey has been very much from that emotion that we talked about earlier, which is fear. And it sounds like you've reached a point now where you're no longer in fear of judgment. And in fact, you've found in being less judgmental of yourself and finding ways to be more understanding of others, that's very much informed your work. That if you can have a client sit in front of you and share very intimate things about struggles in their life and you don't judge them and they feel safe, well, that's the same thing that you work so hard to find, that same feeling of safety. Yeah. And for a lot of people, it sounds like yourself included, religion can be a big part of that. Feeling like the world makes sense and that there are certain rules you can follow, and if you follow them, then things go well. I think that's what, in different ways, we're all looking for that, right?
Yeah. And it takes us, I think, to the realities of where we're at, that, you know, if we zoom out into our lives, like I don't know what my life is all about. I don't even know the next moment what's going to happen. I have so little control over my life of, you know, who my parents were, I've got no control of. I've got no control of a lot of what's going to happen tomorrow. So those fears can really constrain us. And, you know, they're understandable fears. they're things we can't control, we can't know. And yet they can stop us from really participating in life. Like they stop me from really participating in the life of a young person or a young boy, or they stop me, or in relationships, they will stop me from really, I don't know, being myself in some way. And so I think of it almost as a dance between faith and fear that I keep living. You know, it's like I go out in my everyday life and I don't know, my son is upset and annoyed at something, and I'm like at the threshold between this cave of fear that I can step into and be like dismissive and stop that, and we've got to get going, you know, we've got to get to nursery, or we can't displease whoever this other person is, or, you know, all of those fears that suddenly jump into my life and that are going to affect maybe how I relate to my son. Or I can hover in the doorway of faith and think, okay, it's okay. Like, I can connect with this person. I'm okay. I can hold this at this point. And I can connect with him. Be the dad that he needs at that moment and make him realise, although he won't in any conscious way, but make him realise that he belongs here and that he's okay in how he is. And then usually within 5 minutes, it's fine, and we're back to nursery in plenty of time, much easier. But
so I guess in that situation, the faith is this is going to work out, that we can take a moment and be present and just connect, and the world isn't going to come crumbling down, and the nursery isn't going to slam and lock the gates.
That's it. And I think that those idea of presence, those ideas of connection, I mean, it's very kind of mindfulness sort of ideas of being in the moment. I guess that's where I now see my faith kind of outworking. It's in being present with whoever, or with just nature around me, or with myself. And there's a bit in all of that. If I can embrace how I am and who I am, then I can embrace what's going on around me. You know, as much as I am afraid of my son being scared and upset, I'm also kind of afraid of that part of me inside me, which is a bit scared and upset, and I want to push him down. So it's all of this. So I think what I experience as spiritual or as my faith is when I can move or live in that side of faith, or that house of faith, or whatever you want to call it, rather than the cave of fear, or that life is okay, I belong here, life has some sort of meaning, although I don't know exactly what that meaning is. You know, if that can lead a bit more in that dance in my everyday life, that's when I experience my faith.
You know, I think us looking out for each other, whatever religious or non-religious background you're from, just makes sense to me. And so it's really interesting hearing how much your challenges around faith and acceptance and fear have informed the path you've ultimately gone on, helping people, and that being something you were raised to think of as so important, but doing so in a way where it's like, okay, somebody can come to me and whatever their problems are, whatever their perspective is, I will work with them. Yes, maybe part of the reason I'm in this chair doing this job is because of my religious background, but that can be a part of the conversation if they bring it up and that's what they're struggling with. Or equally, it can be just a part of why I'm showing up and why I'm here, as opposed to, I guess sometimes people would have fear over counseling from any kind of religious background of, oh, are you going to try and convert me or say that I can only see the world in this way?
Yeah.
I don't get the impression at all with your experience you're going to be like that.
Well, I know the dangers of that. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I love it because I think you're dead on, or at least is what I hope to be. So, and this is where I've got to, which is so different to maybe what I felt growing up, that when you give people that space of acceptance for them just to be who they are and to meet somebody else at the level where they are and feel met, like then change is going to happen. Like it can't help but happen. You know, that's independent of what
they believe.
Or yeah, it's kind of like bearing your emotional soul. And you can view that experience from a religious point of view or just from a purely emotional point of view.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think counselling is that. And I've definitely found through my own experience going to therapy for 4 years, I have a certain connection to my counsellor, which I can't quite describe. I can't quite put into words, but I feel both very connected with her and also very respectful that that is a relationship which is a set time of the week. And that's when we see each other. And so it's both structured, but also feels very difficult to define. And I guess if that's not a parallel with religion, I don't know what is, that it can be both impossible to describe and also very structured. So on that note, then, I guess we will wrap up for this episode. If people want to find out more about your work, you've got a blog on your website. I'm assuming a lot of the resources about this conversation and your work can be found there.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you head over to Thomas Rowland Counselling Services, got a blog there. I did a whole lot on spirituality. And I'm also doing a weekly conversation with a friend on YouTube. And you can see the links there to Faith and Honest Conversation, where we are both talking about kind of as honestly as we are able to our own experiences of faith and trying to make it okay to talk about.
Brilliant. All right. Well, thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you, Bobby.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.